Hey, welcome back, everybody, to my podcast. And today's guest is none other than Avi Evan from Maccabi Tel Aviv. Avi is going into his 17th season at Maccabi. And today he talked about the journey to Maccabi while also becoming an assistant coach early on, later on transferring to a front office role while still being a player development coach, and then last season temporarily being appointed head coach of Maccabi Tel Aviv. He talked today about the various roles that he occupied during his tenure there, that the mind shifts that he experienced, the information that helped him to become a head coach and that helped him during his head coaching period, the information flow within the organization, the intel that gathering goes into it while scouting players, the scouting process itself, lots of little details that many people probably wouldn't think about. And Avi is a very insightful and highly professional person that it was interesting to talk to and hear him explain certain things that his philosophy of how to approach relationships with players and the respect level that he expects and that he also portrays. So we talked a lot about the organizational identity as well as the communication within, of course, the communication within the club. If you're not subscribed yet, please subscribe to my podcast on YouTube. Also subscribe to all the audio platforms, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the other platforms you can imagine. It's everywhere. And we're not stopping this summer. We're going to get more coaches, more front office people in here, and we're going to grow this podcast even more. Become a subscriber and a Patreon if you like. Looking forward to hearing you and seeing you somewhere on this basketball globe. And thanks for being here. Bye. All right, Avi, welcome to my little world here.
Yeah, man, it's a big world. Only from your point of view, it looks small. But for all the others, it's really big.
Yeah. You know, I can't recognize it myself that much because I do it, I upload it, and then you follow it a little bit, and it's an ambitious project, but you always want it to be bigger. So I feel, for me, it's still a small world.
Well, step by step, and you know how it is, how it goes.
Avi, I'm glad you came on again. I'm glad you agree. We've been talking about it for a while, and now off season is the best time because during the season it's crazy for everybody. So I appreciate you joining my podcast and joining this conversation. And you're on here because you're just a good person, and you have a special path. We really got close over the years, and I don't remember. Do you actually remember where we met for the first time? I don't.
I have no idea. You know, first of all, thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure and an honor. And you know, before we were talking about this podcast, I was thinking, wait, when was the first time I met Benz? And man, I have no idea. I mean, so many places around the world we met each other, so I have no idea. So
I had a conversation with several people, but I don't remember, and then I just blame it on Vegas. I say that it wasn't.
It's the best.
This time it didn't stay in Vegas. What happened in Vegas didn't stay in Vegas. We are still friends, so it's
very good. That's good.
But your path has been very special, and we talked about it prior to coming on a little bit, and we're going to talk to various roles that you occupy in at Maccabi. And as you know through my podcast, I like. For you, it was a little bit difficult because I didn't know if I should categorize you in a head coach category, in a front office category, executive. But you're going to tell me which one fits the best and how you define it. But before we go into the four segments that I usually prepare, I wanted to always ask everybody about the background, a little bit of where basketball found you for the first time.
I started playing when I was really young. And I was a crazy player that was always with basketball, like always. And it's funny because, like, I don't know, like, I don't know, few months ago, I was driving to a practice and I saw the basketball next to me in the car. And I was thinking to myself, wait, man, it was the longest day. This is the longest day I have in my life. I mean, so it really started early, And you know that in Israel we go to the army, and after the army, before the army, I played a little bit in the national team, U16, U18. And then I went to the army and I stopped playing basketball. After 3 years in the army, I came back to play, but I felt that I'm not going to be at the highest level. So immediately I shift my path, and I started working as a coach. And then from there, I mean, step by step, I started coaching U16, U18, and then assistant coach in the first division. And then after a few years in Bnei Herzliya, after like 5 years, I came to Maccabi Tel Aviv to work with the juniors for 2 years. And at that period of time, it's funny because Oded Katash got fired, and Zvika Sheriff took the team, and he asked me to come and work with him as an assistant. So it was 16 years ago. It's been a while from then, and in the last 16 years, I'm here.
Let's say yellow, like, and blue. 16 years. You're going into your 17th year. That's like, was there? It's, you know, Maccabi is a very historical club from throughout all the years, and all the players, all the coaches that have been there, it's legendary. Is there a period of time where you felt like that, like you felt the most growth, and there's some like just like challenges that you found during that period, and you felt like you grew as a person the most?
To be honest with you, the most fascinating period of time that I had in the last 16 years was right now. I mean, this 3 or 4 months that I worked as a head coach, like I had to do things and to go out of my comfort zone and to deal with things that I haven't dealt with for a long time. And I felt that other than facing this all obstacles, it made me grow up as a man and to face so many things at the same time, not only in basketball, in my life as well. So it was a fascinating period of time.
So, like, but early on, whenever you did start coaching, when was the transition period? Because we're going to talk about various transitions, but when was the transition period? The first transition period from assistant coach to front office. When was the decision made that you like initially went to the front office before you came back as a head coach this past season?
I can't remember exactly when, but after like 5 years in Maccabi Tel Aviv as an assistant coach, the owners came and told me, listen, Avi, we don't have scouting department in Maccabi Tel Aviv. And at that time, they thought that the best thing will be to bring someone from the system and not bring someone from outside, because Maccabi is a really big organization, big system. And they were feeling that if you're coming from inside, that it will be better for everyone. Mm-hmm. So at that period of time, I was like 30 something. And I thought to myself, okay, I still have time to come back to the coaching area. So I did. I thought to myself, it's going to be a nice experience. That's what I'm doing like all the time. I was looking for players as an assistant coach.
Did you have the feeling during that front office period that you saw yourself in the coach's shoes? Like you always saw it from the coach's eyes, or did you manage to shift over to the front office eyes and look at it with different eyes, a set of eyes?
That's a great question, because it takes time. Like coach, player, when a player stops playing and he starts being a coach, you always think it takes time until he stops thinking as a player and start thinking as a coach. And I think that it took me a while to stop looking at things as a coach and look at things from another, from different eyes and from different head.
Yeah, different angles. And it's, but like, What was the biggest difference on like see it from the coach's eyes and then see it from the front office eyes? Like what did you feel was the like the less emotions, more talent based? Like just, you know, coaches have a very, we talked about it with some other front office people. It's a more of a short vision because it's a more of like success now, win now. You know, like the front office has a more, especially in the NBA, has a more of a long term vision in terms of sustaining talent and gathering up talent. But when you shift, like what did you see the biggest difference between a coach's vision and the front office vision?
I think it's exactly the points that you just mentioned, like less emotions and see the whole picture, bring players for not only to win this period of time, but to bring something that will stay here in this club for more years, to bring not only players that are proven and they were good, but look more on the talent and what can he be in 1 or 2 years. And I think that was the biggest change.
So like you looked at it from a upside development factor as well.
True. Exactly.
How do you, that's another question that after like so many years at the club with different roles, but the challenge is also, like you said, like you have to sometimes get out of your comfort zone. You have different angles to look from, but staying motivated is also a factor, you know, staying motivated, finding new challenges, finding new ambitious projects and finding motivation from a front office aspect, from a coach's aspect, from an ambition aspect, title aspect, because you've won the EuroLeague before, you've won the Israeli championship, the Israeli Cup. Like, I mean, there's been championship rings and championship banners, if I might call so, I don't know. But that, what's the driving factor to continue and stay at the peak of motivation?
You know, there are small goals that you achieve and brings you a lot of motivation. First of all, I feel blessed that I can tell my kids that I didn't work even one day in my life, because I'm going to meet my passion every morning. So this is the biggest, I don't know if it's the biggest best, but it's a huge thing for me that I'm coming every morning to the arena and then to the office. Part of the things they do here is working with the players. So I really feel motivated. And the other thing is look, if I'm looking at the last 16 years in Maccabi Tel Aviv, so we took the EuroLeague championship, and then players like Danny Abdia, Roman Sürkin now, who were like totally out of the radar and came here and became big-time players, Zussman, players that our scouting department together with Yair Shever, who worked with me for decades.
Shout out to Yair.
I will. He deserves it. So to bring Danny and Zussman, who one of them became a good NBA player, and in his future is still there, and Zussman and Roman Sürkin, players that just grow in this system, and to bring players like Scotty and Tyrese and Elijah Bryant. I mean, to bring players that never played EuroLeague and to see them playing after 2 years at the highest level, one of them the NBA, Dorsey. I mean, so it gives me a lot of energy, a lot of motivation. And I was on the run for the next goal and the next one who will be here for the next title. So I assume this is part of this the drive that we have here in the organization, that you always hungry for the next thing.
Yeah, by the feel of the fans, you feel that also, that everybody's hungry. But when you're in the arena, it's a special atmosphere. So you can feel the hunger. But what I can hear from your telling is that it's more about the people that you bring up, and you see that other people succeed. So it's also about creating the environment of success and of future, the title is the side effect. You know, like it feels like the effect is the development and the connection, the process itself. And then if you get to the title, that's the cherry on the sundae. But you also have, it feels like they have the conducive environment to have success in a relationship building to help the players and everybody else succeed in the future.
First of all, Benas, as you mentioned before, here in Maccabi Tel Aviv, we cannot put the development and the relationship as a secondary thing. The first thing that we want to achieve is titles. That's who we are. That's the DNA of the club. That's part of what we're trying to build here. This is what we are trying to transfer or to transform to the players who comes here and to the coaches. And that's the first thing. And the other thing is really to enjoy helping players being better. I think that every player that stepped here in Maccabi Tel Aviv and I had a chance to work with left something in me, and I'm trying to leave something in him, like something that will help him be a better player and also to be a better person in the future.
Mm-hmm. But let's talk a little bit about the profession itself, because of the relationship factor is definitely there. But can you define the role that you have that you had until you became a head coach this last season, where you were dabbling, like it's a front office, but also player development role. So you kept your coaching vein pumping, and you still had the front office role. And talk to me a little bit about the transition and the role shift that you had, and how would you define your exact position at that time?
At that point that I spoke with you about, when I left the assistant coach position into the head of scouting department, I, from the first second, I knew that I'm not going to leave the coaching section, because I love it. I mean, I feel that I have big part in me that enjoys in an unbelievable way from working with the players, from talking with the players, from learning from the players and teaching the players. So at that point, Coach Blatt was the head coach when I was the assistant, and I moved to the scouting department, and we opened a development team, skill coach that stays that works on the floor with the players. Of course, everything is on the same page with the coach. And from then, we had several coaches and development group still working as much as possible. There's so many players that don't have enough practice time because of the games, because of the flights, and we are there to help them getting better. Most of the time, most of the players that comes to Maccabi Tel Aviv in the last, if you look at the last 5 years, are players that didn't play EuroLeague, and we are trying with the help and with the understanding of where we of and the vision of where they can be in the future to help them increase and raise their game and their abilities.
Yeah, it's. I think it's a challenge of like the guys, especially keeping the guys in shape that don't play, to have the balance of individual or get still the sweat in the skill work, and not to be too far removed from the actual team 5-on-5 aspect. And that's the challenge of the balance during the EuroLeague season. I think for many EuroLeague teams, with the travel, with the domestic league, EuroLeague, dabbling back and forth, different rosters, and injuries come into play. So I'm sure there is a lot of, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit later. But how did you keep the distance? I mean, if you did keep the distance, I don't know. Like keep the distance between the development coach aspect and then front office aspect, because there's like the player and the person are more or less the same that you work with. They have a certain vision of you, And you have to stay true to yourself. You have to be your authentic self, but you also have to maintain a little bit of a distance to the player because of the front office position that you occupy. Did you feel that balance or the shifting between the two, or did you feel like you have to be natural and be yourself and just open up completely?
I'll be honest with you, Benes. Like each one of us has his own way to approach player. Each one of us, according to his personality, has the way to create distance. I mean, there are some guys who are not talking at all with the player because they are afraid. I don't think that way. I mean, I always believe on talking to the players, getting to the players, hearing the players. Of course, putting a clear line where he cannot go. But I really think that part of my job is finding the balance between being close to the player, because most of the players that are not playing and working with me are frustrated because they are not playing. Okay, they're working, they like to work, they want to work, they want to improve themselves, they're coming with a lot of motivation and with the belief that they would get better in this practice, but at the same time, you know, they are not playing. So you got to be there for them in a way, but you got to put a clear line what we cannot talk about. But I think it's interesting, this line.
I think that's the whole challenge of this position, I think, or like it's an assistant coach position, essentially, like a branch of the front office that's an assistant coach. But that's the essence of creating a relationship with the players, letting them vent of how much they hate the head coach, but then also at the same time you have to protect the head coach's authority. And I'm sure that you faced a lot of those situations where the players are venting and complaining and not playing. And like you said, how did you like? Did you have? We don't mention names. I don't want to like any kind of interactions sure. or often. But did you have any kind of specific challenge in the past where you felt like this is a very very thin line and where in essence you feel like he should be playing but he's not playing and you have to support the coach at the same time balance it with the player's expectations at that time, you know, like how do you calm the player down by still keeping the coach and head coach in the authority position?
Benes, there are two words, two things that are you gotta have. One of them is respect. In every conversation that you have is respect. Respect each other. Respect the people that we are talking about. It doesn't matter how frustrated you are. It doesn't matter. You can be mad. You can be... it doesn't matter. Respect. So this is the first word, the key word that I use with players. So when you have this word, respect, then things are not going out in a bad way. And at the same time, my job, first of all, is to protect the coach. So it doesn't matter what I think. When I work with a player, I have only one thing in mind. Is that's the coach decision. If it's the coach decision, then it's the organization decision. I cannot go and let him, listen, maybe he's... When you start working that way, you create bad things in the team, and I don't want it to happen. Always, there's only one truth, which is the coach truth. And it's funny because one of the most... famous stories, and I will not mention names, but was a player that in one season he just didn't want to go to the locker room. He was so frustrated that he didn't want to go to the locker room. So I just grabbed him and I throw him to the locker room. I told him, "Listen, you're going now, and we talk after. Afterward, go inside to the coach's office and talk with him. You're not going nowhere." And this player, at the end of the day, was one of the most famous players in Maccabi Tel Aviv in the last decade. So you know how it is. Sometimes you just got to be a filter to the player and filter to the coach when he's mad about about the player. You got to be there to get the hit, to let him take out all the bad things he has in his stomach. And in that way, when they get together, both of them are coming in a better way.
Yeah, that's the filtering process is the most difficult from both sides. Like you have, I like coffee. So there's a good metaphor for that.
Really? You like coffee? I didn't know it.
You didn't know, huh?
Interesting.
So there's a different filtering process. There's a V60 and there's a Chemex process. So and both filters are different. One is a little bit thinner and the one is a little bit thicker. So that's the filtering process. One is for the players and one is for the coaches. Then you have to have a filter for both, and you have to understand of which direction to go and how much to let through. So I think that's the challenge. And this is like your role. And we've talked off air a lot about commonalities of our roles that I occupy also in the front office of the Celtics, but also when I was in the past coaching with the national team. Yeah. And this is the same kind of, it reminds me of the same, like it keeps you alive, it keeps you going, like the summers with the national team, like you have different impulses, the relationship factors, the filtering, the development. But then also when you go shift to the front office side, it's a little bit of a different angle, and you have to find yourself looking and analyzing things from a different angle. So it reminds me of my roles in the past a little bit.
That one thing you gotta be flexible.
Yeah,
you cannot like go and hit the wall when you hear it. Like you gotta let these people talk a little bit. Again, everything is in a respectful way, but this filtering might be a key factor in a success of a player and in a relationship between coach and a player.
But did you have, like, I'm wondering also the timing of the conversations you have with the players. Like, do you observe each player individually, or do you have like certain players that you watch closely and then you pull them aside when you see that it's going into the wrong direction? Do you wait them to approach you? Like, what's the, because there is like this German expression, Fingerspitzengefühl. It's a long word.
Sounds like a great, great, great dish.
Yeah, it's it's the feeling of the fingertips, you know, and like you have to have this feeling for the game, for the on court and off the court. So when do you feel the timing is right to approach the player, or do you feel like the player has to approach you first?
You know, this is great. At the beginning, I was waiting that the player will approach because I'm the coach and I want him. When we are coaches, we are basketball people. We gotta be smart and not right. We gotta observe every situation in a different way. There are some players that don't want you to come and talk to them when they are in a group. You gotta take them to the side. There is some player that before the practice you observe his situation and you hug him and you take him to the side and you talk with him, not about life, just about small things, that you let him talk, and then he comes in a different way to the practice. So you gotta be flexible with it. I mean, you gotta know who needs what at a certain time. That's part of our job. You cannot come, you cannot just sit on the computer and work the same. This one is a shooter. This one is it's impossible. You gotta work with the feeling, with emotional IQ. You gotta look at the eyes of a player. You gotta read his eyes. Sometimes to smell his mood, and in that way, it's you gotta build your relationship differently with each one of the players.
Yes, yes. I have another metaphor today. I have metaphors there. Have you heard Bruce Lee's, or did you see the documentary Be Like Water, or Be Water, I think it's called. But it's basically it's like that you have to have the flow and just go with the water, the stream that is going along. And then you kind of, you know, like you see the rock, the water's flowing over the rock, around the rock, and you kind of observe the situation as it is and you adjust accordingly. But the key word that you said, or the key words, are emotional IQ. And I think that's a very good factor in very important factor in the ability to have success on a team and to have success in relationship building. But when you, if we talk about now about the team building and the team roster makeup, if we shift a little bit towards that, do you factor in team chemistry in recruiting when scouting players and putting a team together, or do you feel like it's going to be a natural thing that occurs, or it doesn't occur during the season? Because sometimes it occurs, sometimes you can, according to that, you can select players of which characters can fit with each other, but sometimes also you can also see that these characters are too many alpha dogs, you know what I mean, like that's not going to fit, although the talent may fit. But do you still get the alpha dogs and try to figure it out, or do you say no to one of the alpha dogs and have two of them on the team and then try to deal with it later on?
That's a great question, and I think that the answer is hidden in the last Bruce Lee metaphor. Like usually you try to build things like that. Every piece will go together in order to build the best team, and you build this one as an alpha, and this one will help him here, and this group will be the team that will help them to get this thing. And sometimes you go again. There's no one truth. There's no black and white. Sometimes you especially with us, sometimes we gambled in the past, and I mean, okay, these two players can lead us to here. If we take the other player, which is a better fit personally wise, your seal is here. So it's really changed from team to team and from roster to roster. But most of the time, we're trying to build the team in a way that the players will be able to make the others better. Otherwise, if they take bite of each other, then it's bad.
It falls apart. Yeah, but then
it's bad.
But when you say you take risks and you see that these guys, they can elevate your team's success, how much do you take the coach into consideration? I think that's the
always
question. Okay. And always. In what regard the most?
In his ability to lead, his ability to keep players alive, his ability to understand players, his ability to work with difficult personalities, or I wouldn't say difficult personality, I would say with difficult combinations.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are some coaches who are great when they have their kind of players. There are some coaches that if you bring in totally different kind of players, they will be in a different place as a coaches. So it's really important to try to bring the right players to the way a coach plays or think.
So you found yourself saying no to players that you wanted, even though you felt like they were going to help you, because you thought that the coach will not be able to handle the combination of the roster?
Not only that, you know, the fact that I like a player, and the fact that I like the combination of some players, it's not the thing that makes me decide. Of course, together, first of all the decisions that we're taking here with the coach and Nicola, of course, and yeah, before we're taking and David that joined our group right now. So we're taking this decision together, but me myself, before I recommend the player, I gotta understand within myself, is he good for Avi that likes energy, that likes, I don't know, or will he be good for the coach? It is a different animal than Avi. So mm-hmm. I mean, it takes time. I think it takes time. I think that for you as well, as a scout, it takes time and evolution of building yourself from the point that you started into the point that you're here, because at the beginning you like playing. Hey, man, he's a great player. Let's bring him. And step by step, you understand that it's not you that standing on the bench. So you're going to bring players that not necessarily players that you like, players that will be fit to the coach.
That's the key. I think that's the key difference between NBA and Europe, because in Europe, like, you do have to have a consideration for the structure, for the system of the coach, and seeing that it's going to be a short term, like the success is imminent. Like it's supposed to be this season now. And in the NBA, like you are trying to accommodate the coaching factor and the if it's going to fit the general theme of things, but you don't want to say no to superior talent. You know, like sometimes like the talent is just so elite at that level that you cannot, at sometimes you cannot say no, unless it's there's a clear red flags, whether like in the background, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, like where those are like probably no-nos. But in Europe, the talent level is too concentrated, and you have to find the right fit for the roster to fit together, even though you might not have like the best five players that gonna automatically to learn to play together. So there's like role players you have to consider in that whole theme.
I agree.
Alberani was on a podcast as well, and he was talking about that the front office, especially in his position, you have to live in the future. So that what he meant is also preparing for injuries, for roster changes, somebody gets bought out, yada yada yada. How far in the future do you think you have to live, and how early do you prepare for those moments that when they come? Like when do you have your list ready for what situations?
First of all the things that happening in the same season for me are not future. For me, they are not future. They are now. And I got to be ready from day one. From day one, the season started, immediately you got to be ready for injury, for million things. This is crazy world. Corona, I don't know. Anything can happen.
Yeah.
So for me, everything that happens in the season is not future. Is nowadays. And I got to be ready, and we got to be ready from day one, from the season. Once the season started, that's it. We're inside. Everything that happens is now, is not in the future. And regarding the future, which is the next season, look, we are so many years in this position, and most of the players that played without the players that joined in the last season are well known, and we know them very good. So once the season started, for me, it's time to start working about the next season. So when the first game started, for us, it's the tip-off for the next season. That's how it works.
So, and you obviously have, like you said, you have a scouting department, and you, as the season is going on, you are... or everybody in the office is scouting and preparing, watching other leagues and watching for the following season and preparing the roster in terms of like the contracts, the way they're stacked, which guys may leave, which guys you may not have, some guys you may not want to have back, and you want to see replacements as the season is going on. As the season starts right away, you start watching for the next season. That's right.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes.
So as we talked about that, talk me through your regular day of work. Like how much do you watch film? At what time do you watch film? How do you incorporate practices and watching film? How many practices do you watch as a front office employee? Where do you differentiate of how much time to put in, what players and what time to dedicate to watching film, calling agents, writing emails, and then watching the current team practice and grow?
Well, usually most of the mornings I start at the gym, as I told you, together with Yair. We start working with the players. In those days, we work around 2 hours. We separate the team and we work individually with the players. Quick shower and immediately to the office. We start watching games and there's no one routine, because there are some days that there's no practices, and immediately you go to the gym. At the beginning of the season, we start with scanning the leagues and not focusing on certain players, because if you focus immediately on certain players, you might lose others, and I don't like it. So at the beginning of the season, we track the leagues, we watch players, starting preparing a tier file with a list of all the players. And you know, as the season goes, you start focusing more and more on players who are interested more. And regarding how much I watch the team, it depends where we are at that certain time, because you know, big part of this season, the teams in games, there's not a lot of practices, and I felt it as a head coach a few months ago. Basically, there's not a lot of practices to watch. I mean, so many recovery practices, so many light practices, so many practices that you prepare the team for the game. So I'm trying to be at the impact practices where I can see the players, when I can see the energy, when I can see the chemistry, where there is intensity. So whenever there is a kind of practice, I'm there. Usually, I like to speak with agents at night, because I like this time of the day, of the night. Like after the kids goes to sleep, that's the time for me to start working, start texting, emailing. So my day is like divided to two. At the beginning of the day, I'm starting with practices, and then office, watching player, talking players, and at night I coming back to work. That's the time for the States to talk with agents, with coaches, with Benes, if he's in Boston. That's so, how it looks like.
So if when you said you're scanning the leagues, first of all, in a broad sense, so statistically, you see who's standing out, you see which teams may be overachieving right now, why they're overachieving. Is there a certain process you go by when you scan those leagues, that you kind of start slowly, like you said, we're using again a coffee filter for that, and slowly concentrate on the players that you need? But the initial process is statistically based, intel based, or is there something else that you consider in
statistically
scanning?
And we try to watch almost every game, every team, one, every player at least one or two times. I mean, and then you go to, I mean, after you see the statistics, because at October, November, okay, you might see a stats that is, okay, this player just started, he's a rookie, he started, and he looks bad. You know how it is. So many players starting the European journey, it takes time. So it's not about watching, tracking, and then going back. You always got to work in up and down. You know, there's so many players that you know from this. I mean, every summer league, we go back with a summary of the players that might be prospects in the future. Okay. And then you got already a base, a database to start to work with. And then you watch them, you watch the others. And it goes stats, but it got to go visually as well, because stats cannot stand alone. Never.
Eye test. He has to pass the eye test. So, but when you say you're gathering up a database and as much as you can reveal, what tools do you use mostly for note taking and for do you have your own database? You use something else? Is there we use like Evernote, Google Sheets? Is there something, some certain apps or
no,
tools that you use?
Our database that we put on, if it was an every player, if it's a player that we're tracking, that we know that it has more room to grow, a bigger report, in that way. I'm not complicating things.
Okay. So let's talk about a little bit about intel gathering, you know, because there's also the intel gathering factor is a major one, especially whether it's Europe, NBA, anywhere in basketball, it's a crucial factor. How much weight do you put on good intel versus bad intel, and how do you differentiate between the sources that you get the intel from? Do you double check from the other side that you maybe have like conflicting information? Because everybody's, like you said, the coach always has a different truth. So depending on who you talk to, you also get a different truth about the player and the intel that you may get. And in essentially every club, every coach has their own experiences with the player because the dynamics are different. So how do you interpret the intel correctly? And how do you use the sources? I'm double questioning here, but how do you use the sources that you get from, get the information from in the long term?
I will tell you a story. I call one coach and I ask him how the player is. And he told me, listen, this is not player for Maccabi Tel Aviv. He's not practicing enough. He's not. I ask Yair, hey, call the other coach. And he coached. He told me, listen, this is an unbelievable kid. This kid is a fortune. He's an asset for every club, especially for a club like Maccabi Tel Aviv, who has the fans. So sometimes this example shows you that sometimes if you lean on one source, you can find yourself, you gamble. Because each coach has his own vision and his own
expectation.
Feelings. About a player, and he might be really mad on him because he just because he didn't play, because he twisted his ankle, and all his attitude on a player will be bad, and it's the same opposite. And so first of all, you got to know who the coach is. If it's a strong coach who likes a hard worker. And every player that doesn't work like crazy is immediately overruled. So first thing, you got to have few sources. I think that it is very important to speak not only with coaches, but also with trainers, physios, players, and then to get a bigger picture. Because coaches has only one projector on the player. And you got to watch the player. You got to learn the player from so many different angles and to get a better feeling and a better better information about who is who is really, not only what the coach think about. So I think that, as you said, nowadays, I mean, like 20 years ago, there wasn't a video. It was very hard to call. It's very hard to, man, right now in three messages, you get all the information from a different angle. So once it becomes so easy, you got to use it every time on every player and to get as much information as possible in order to know in the best way who the player is.
Yeah, I think there's a spectrum of information quality. There's like a different, and you, like you said, you have to find the middle ground where it fits more or less and you get a more or less the picture of how the player is as a person, as a player, as an IQ. Sometimes there's immediate red flags across all boards and then you kind of put it away. So I think like you said, like, because you said the coach has one perspective, and just like you said, from your role as an assistant coach, you also get to know the player from a different side. When you talk to him, when he's venting, like, you get to know the person that the head coach will never know, probably. And what all the information that you get, that you gather from the sources, I'm very interested in the communication process internally and then externally. Like, how do you handle information that the intel internally within your staff, within the coaches, who's supposed to know what, how to differentiate? Because, like, I don't want to go into vast theme of ownership, because it's a different topic. But there's a lot of people that want to know information. So how do you handle information within the club, and how do you distribute it properly?
I think that I never had this problem, to be honest with you. I know exactly who are the guys who are responsible on taking the decision on the player. Whoever take the responsibility of bringing a player, got to know everything. He doesn't need to read all the story, but he got to have all the information that we have on a player. Like, if in our situation, if or Coach Katash, Nikola Vucic, Blatt, Yair Shevach, and Avi Evan are taking decision. All of them have to know everything about the player. So other than them, no one needs to know anything about it. That's it. For me, that's how I see things.
Simple as that. Yeah, simple as that. But then externally, external communication and information handling, you also have, do you have alliances within, because it's a competitive environment, right? So there's, you're also competing in recruiting and scouting players from other teams that may be interested. How much, like, is it conducive with the competitive environment and with building your roster, sharing information with, or maybe comparing information with other front offices from other teams, or is that something that you completely hide and keep it for your, in your close pocket, that it's like, make this, we're all watching the same players, but they might not be recruiting the player until you maybe mention his name, you know, like there's a certain of like hiding your cards. How much of that is going on?
When you go out from your house in your neighborhood and you have a coffee in your hand, there are some people, you will ask them, do you want a coffee? And there are some neighbors that you will go from the other side because you don't want them to have your coffee. So that's how life is. I mean, there are some clubs that you share information because you know they will keep it. It's not about clubs. It's more about relationship that you build through the years. I mean, there are some people that I know that if they're asking for information, I will give them the information. And it goes, you know, both sides. But then at the same time, there are clubs, or there are people that will not, I don't know that well, and we're not in strong relationship. So I don't feel safe asking them because I don't know how much of a true, or I don't know. So if you trust someone, you build relationship, then it doesn't matter if he's a competitor, compete with you or not. I mean, if he's my friend and I trust him, I know it will go both ways.
Yeah, it's a. I suppose it's a long-term investment of personal relationships that you also use to have in your circle, in your corner, to protect yourself from false information. As exactly. There's also false rumors going around a lot.
That's true.
Let's talk a little bit about the coaching from this past season as you transferred to be a head coach for this role. How much did the experience that you had, I mean, it certainly probably helped a lot, but you said you had to get out of your comfort zone, but which aspects of the roles that you had prior helped you the most in your head coaching role to finish off the season, and which things you felt like you were missing because of the other parts of your job before you took over?
I think that what helped me the most were the fact that I knew all the players, I was familiar with them, I worked with them. And I help them when they have problems, when they struggle. So I didn't feel like I'm joining a new team where I have to introduce myself and who are you. I mean, I knew everyone, all of them, and I knew the problems that they had, and I knew the problems that the coach had with them. So I was super familiar with the situation. This is one. The second. I know this, the DNA of this club. I mean, from someone who comes from outside to join this craziness and this crazy expectations and the fans, it's not easy. So it helped me a lot. I think that also we talk about it. I mean, the fact that through the years, you learn through the crisis that players have, and you develop more and more the emotional IQ, and I think that through the years you become better and better and better in this aspect. So it really helps me, and I felt that the players were really engaged and really wanted to do something better than what we achieved before.
Did you feel that man, you still had individual work throughout the years, and you had the the observing of practices, but I also worked with coaches who worked only in the national team and they didn't work in the club for a vast majority of the season. And it felt like, and they said it, that they were missing some sort of timing of the game. They're missing some sort of, you know, the rhythm of the game. It took them a while to get used to it and get adjusted to it as they started off coaching the national team in preparation. It was also preparation for the head coach because of the missed time during the season. Did you feel any of that when you took over, that you like felt little, you missed like a little bit of the rhythm of the timing of timeouts of the game, of the flow? You know what I mean? Like the whole shenanigans with the game flow.
To be honest with you, until now, until this second that you asked it, I didn't think about it. I didn't feel at that time that I'm not in the rhythm or whatever. I really felt like a fish that was thrown into the ocean, and I didn't have time. Everything was so quick. Like, you know, the owners called me and asked me to go and do it. And a day after, I'm practicing. 2 days after, there's a game. So I didn't have time to think. And I was like in an emergency situation. And I think that if I'm thinking during this period of time, I felt a little bit that I'm not. I miss a little bit the baseline, a new baseline. Usually, I had in mind like special situation, bang, immediately I have it in mind. And in the last, I don't know, few years, I didn't deal with it, so I had to learn in at nights and to call my assistant and tell, listen, I need 10 new special situations from baseline for last 5 seconds, last. So I had to work like at night in order to be there, to be in this situation. I didn't have time to be naked in these situations.
Yeah, that's a natural catch up. I think that you realize during those games that's those things you don't know until you do it. You know, you don't know until you know, basically. Yeah. I saw, because we saw each other in Kaunas when you guys played there, and I really enjoyed, and I could identify with the emotions that you portrayed as a coach on the sideline, getting the team going. It was, you know, the energy going. It has to be. You feel like it's a necessity as a Maccabi coach to have this emotional factor with it, because of the fans, also because of the infatuation with the game and the love of the game, to portray that? Or is that something that it's also like, I mean, obviously you can select the coach because he's emotional and because he has that competitive external vision of how the game should be played, you know, but is that a clear advantage as a Maccabi coach, or is that not necessary to have? As you were natural, it felt natural.
I'm not sure. I mean, that's me. I mean, but this is part of who I am. I'm passionate with this game. When I start practice, I come with the same energy. When I have a workout, I come with the same energy. So it was natural for me to bring this energy. And one word about the fans that you mentioned. You know, they have a crazy atmosphere. And in the last 10 years, I was there only for outside. But once you go inside as a coach to feel this energy, for me it was crazy. It gave me a different perspective about this fans, about the, it's not only in the gym, but outside the arena when you go out and so many people approaching you and happy from. Happy is not the right way. Not the right word. It's like bigger than happy. It was absolutely crazy to feel this energy from the fans, and it, you know, it goes again both sides. It's loaded. You feel loaded with energy. You start the game like crazy, and when they feel it from the coach and from the players, if I manage to bring it to the players and they can't come to play with the same energy, then this synergy is crazy. But every coach has his own way. I mean, I'm sure that this, it's my of my one of my strengths. But at the same time, there are other coaches that don't have this crazy energy, but they have different qualities. So it's not necessarily got to be in a Maccabi coach.
This profession makes you feel alive, and you can sense that when you were very alive on the sidelines. And I also feel that we are both alive very well during this podcast. So I was going to ask you if you're ready for my ATOs that I prepared for you. You asked the assistant coach for plays. I prepared some ATOs for you as well.
Wait, Menas, I have a phone. I have to go. I'm joking. I'm here.
Okay, let's go into the ATOs, and we're going to fly through them. And I just want to see, I'm not going to chime in so that people can relax from my voice a little bit. Biggest question in off season.
In off season is the chemistry and how the puzzle will be built. That's for me the biggest question. How we build the right fit, we bring the right fit for the team, because you have so many players on the table. How you bring this player to play this with this player? I mean, in every position you get 10 options. Why you bring this one and not this one? Like, this one is a great shooter, but this one is a great also a great shooter. This one is a better defender. I mean, so this is like a newborn. Every offseason is a newborn. Like, you gotta, they have the excited of building a new thing. And to me, this is the biggest thing. Why you take this player, not this player? Why you build this roster in that way? That's for me the biggest one.
Biggest question during the season.
Why we bring this player, not this player? No, I'm joking. How we make this team better? How we are making these players a better group? How we create a team that will achieve more than what we have? That's always keeps my mind busy. What we miss, what we can do better, how this team can be better, because we have the potential. We gotta think all the time in order to find small things that will lead the team to be better. It can be profession-wise. It can be on the other aspects of people.
Biggest question, end of season.
Right. Usually, after the end of the season, it's not about question for me. It's about trying to analyze what we did good, what we did wrong, in order to improve ourselves. So it's not a question, but it's a thing.
Reflection.
Why we think, exactly. Reflection on our job, on bringing players, on working, on thinking. All this reflection, every season, when you finish this reflection, it makes you a better coach or a better scout. Doesn't matter. If you try to understand, not to say that was his fault, but you go inside deep in order to understand what you did wrong or not good enough, then it's a key factor for the future.
What tabs are open right now in your browser on your computer?
Part of them I cannot tell you. No.
That's the essence of the question.
You know how it is. Sportando, Synergy, Instat, all the things. And we're in the office working, so okay. They usually the smaller basketball apps.
Okay. Top three podcasts you listen to?
First one is Benas. I'm pushing. Usually I don't listen a lot to podcasts. I like to listen to lectures, spiritual lectures about how to become a better person and a better worker, and how you can build chemistry in a team This kind of lectures. That's usually what I listen to.
And this is a typical Benos question here. So how do you think about thinking?
How do you think
about thinking?
What do you mean?
How do you justify your thinking process when you reflect on your decision making?
To me, the most important thing is try to go out of your, always don't think like Avi. Always go out and try to see how he thinks, what he did. I mean, when you try to
he being anybody, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Like when you think with yourself, you always can find excuses. But when you try to go outside and put things on the table and try to see how you did things, what was the process that you had, then this is always the way I think. I mean, I always try to go out from the picture and try to look things objectively, because otherwise you always find an excuse and to defend yourself. This is a problem. I always try to judge myself in an objective way. And otherwise, I will always be right.
Helicopter view.
Exactly.
So what's the best purchase of the last year?
Probably a book or something.
Do you have a special book? Like if you can mention one book for the listeners, is there something that you can advise?
I would say The Genius Friend.
Genius Friend.
Yes, The Genius Friend.
The Genius Friend. And this is in Hebrew. There's translations for that in English?
Yeah. Genius. I will send it to you afterwards.
Okay, please send it to me. I would
in Hebrew it calls the genius friend.
Okay, and this is the perfect ending because you're my genius friend. Avi, thanks a lot for joining this conversation. I hope I didn't make you sweat. I really enjoyed the conversation going back and forth about certain topics that I hope our listeners also learn something from. I'm pretty sure if they're reflecting and they're cognizant of this conversation, they will take something from it. And that's my aim. That's the aim of my podcast. So have some reflection and some insightfulness. And I hope that you also didn't feel that I intruded too much into any kind of topics that were maybe off topic in the past.
Benas, first of all, thank you. I feel blessed to be here together with so many great personalities that were here before. So I feel honored and blessed. At the same time, before I go, travel go, I will tell you that most of the people who listen to you, they're coming because you interview Sina or Trinkieri or whoever, but they don't really know Benas. So I will tell the listeners that I wish for them to be as professional as you in what they're doing. Doesn't matter what they do. This is my ending, and not because I love you. I really, they don't know you, and they don't know how professional you are in what you're doing. So that's the end of the podcast. I really want to thank you, Benas. It was a pleasure, and I really hope that the important things that you spread on basketball and all the small things that build basketball, because basketball is, you hear basketball is such a huge word, but when you go deep, it's separated to so many important small details, so small emotions, small secrets that once you share them, I hope that all of us will be better in what we're doing.
Thanks a lot. I mean, your words mean a lot to me, and I hope we break bread soon again somewhere to have some hummus and falafel somewhere maybe.
On me.
And Thanks, everybody, for listening, for watching. Please subscribe. And there's a lot more guests coming. Looking forward to hearing and seeing everybody soon. Bye, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.